This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Now we've got our next guest in the studio with us.
We sure do. We have Matthew Sleeth, who is here to talk about his show at the, is it Lion or Leon?
Lion
House Museum, which is in Kew, which is like a whole other thing altogether that we could talk about.
And we've got to talk about that. You know, like, awesome. And the house, everything. The house next door. It's
the whole
incredible.
Thing.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about you
yeah,
first,
let's
Matthew,
talk about you.
Because the show you're bringing in is called Drone Opera. So you're obviously an artist.
Yes.
How did you come on this path to get to sitting in front of us today?
Oh, that's a long story.
Talk about whatever comes into your head.
Drone Opera was a few years ago a live performance, and it's had a sort of a quite long life. It's gone through a number of sort of variations, that's the short answer, and the long answer is it's the first live performance I've done. I've been very interested in performers and actors and wanting to do something that when I went to film school as a sort of a student, but I'm usually a visual artist.
Okay.
And so this has been sort of a little bit of a departure.
So you went to film school?
Went to film school. Dad was a very keen photographer, so I was very interested in photography from an early age. From 4 or 5, I was sort of lifted up and I saw the chemicals developing and the image in the dark room as a child. And that the magic sort of, you know, the bug bit me then and I was kind of gone.
And it was so technical then too, wasn't it? You know, like, it's not like, taking a photograph now where it's all digital. It was a real, you know, like, you had to know formulas and how long this had to be done and that had to be done.
Yeah, it was hard. You had to be a chemist.
Science.
You had to be a physicist.
Yeah.
You had to be a...
He
used to go to this thing, the Southern Suburbs Photographic Society, every Tuesday night.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it was the most brutal thing I've ever seen. The competitions were very intense. And he would come home, and then he would spend, like, every waking minute in the darkroom when we were kids. Like, Mum sort of thought of herself as a darkroom widow.
And that smell as well, you know, like the fumes.
The fumes and the chemicals aren't great, and that sort of, you know, had sort of side effects over the years. But it was... a great lesson. I was really lucky. I was the last generation to learn analog and digital at the same time. So I think the year after me at school stopped learning analog.
Yep.
And so most of the digital stuff is really an embedded analog knowledge, you know,
yep.
the way
sure.
that we understand images. And so I feel like I was extremely lucky.
Yep. So what did you do? You said you went to film school, as in... filming.
As in narrative film. Yeah.
Yep. And what happened there? Because that's a tough world.
Well, that was really just a way of looking at art and photography and what I wanted to do in the gallery in a different way at the time. I had really learnt the technical side of what I was really doing early on from, like, you know, from home. And so I also went to photography school at night time and film school during the day.
Wow.
Always with the intention of... working on sort of more gallery-based
so
projects.
So you knew what you wanted to do, you know, like all through your life in a way.
Yeah, I was really lucky. It's one of the things I kind of often look back and think how lucky I was that at 13 or 14 I knew that there was
exactly
nothing else
wanted.
I wanted to do.
Wow.
And that's a
Which
rarity.
Is a gift. It's a real gift.
Yeah. Yeah. And how hard's it been? How hard's your journey been?
Well, in some ways it's been not hard at all because... I'm always doing something that's fun and I'm always doing it with people that I want to hang out with. But I think any artist will tell you, I'm sure, that it's hard to make a living and it's hard, you know, the very best case scenario, if you, you know, work 3 full-time jobs and you're extraordinarily lucky, is you make you can survive.
Right. And so how successful have you been? On your journey. Come on.
I've survived.
You've survived.
Yeah, I'm still doing this.
That's quite a success. Surviving.
Yeah, it's a total success. I always thought that success was not doing something else. And I couldn't... I'm woefully unqualified for anything else. So I had some imagination that I would probably end up as a bank teller. That was kind of the highest I thought I could go. And,
well,
and
there's
that
no
would be
such
tough.
Thing anymore, is there?
And there's probably not going to be much for longer. So that was success was not being a bank teller.
That's awesome.
So where have you shown?
In Melbourne, I've shown my... Well, this is a great... By great fluke, my first show was at the NGV. That was at 18, and I was doing...
How did you get into that?
It was an amazing exhibition. It was a group... It was called the Felix Mann Award. So Felix Mann was a legendary photojournalist from the Life magazine sort of period.
Oh, okay.
And his widow... And had spent a lot of time in Australia. He's English, but he spent a lot of time in Australia. And his widow, when he died, or he left some money for an award for young artists. And I entered that with I think my first year student follower.
Wow.
And it was luck. It was just pure luck. And it had
no. I don't think it's got anything to do with luck. You don't get something like that out of luck.
And there's a couple of people in that group that I still keep in touch with. And the curator of that show, Susan Van Wyk, is still at the NGV.
Oh yes, we've interviewed her many times. She's been there 100 years.
It was either Susan's first show as a curator or early on in her. It was very close to that.
Yep. And she has got such a good eye, hasn't she? She knows what she's doing.
She's amazing. She's sort of someone that over the years we've sort of kept in touch, and I've watched, you know, her. I mean, curators have practices like artists, and you watch, you know, them develop, and she's, she's amazing.
So what happened after that NGV? So people will then start to take notice of you?
Yeah, that's a while ago. So that's actually 93.
Yeah.
Wow.
So... I'm 47, so that's been, you know, quite a long time ago. Mm. I was very into Magnum and the documentary sort of side of things as a teenager. And in fact, I think I begged Dad to take me to Sydney for the Magnum in Our Time exhibition as a 16th birthday present. And so I was lying in bed one day and someone rang me up and said, we want to start this out. We want to start this collective. It's going to be a bit like... And it's we'll do it. And she said, oh, I've tried you every morning I was about to give up. We didn't have answering machines or anything at the share house. And it turned out to be Helen Freeman, who still runs M33, and with Peter Milne, Ricky Maynard and Chris Collar, we started M33.
Right, okay.
Which is still going.
And
so
M33
is a collective.
Yep.
That most recently published Peter Milne's book Juvenalia, a look at sort of Roland S. Howard and Nick Cave and Gina, Gina from the Degeneration.
Oh.
Riley.
Generally. As sort of, teens, basically.
Yep.
And so that's an amazing book.
Yep.
And that was the last thing, M33's, well, the most recent thing, in fact. And that is sort of a collective that's still publishing and exhibiting.
Right.
And that Peter is still a member of.
Right.
And so that's something I'm, very proud to be involved in.
And this, a drone opera, you said you produced it 3 or 4 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, so in 2015 it was a live performance at the Meat Market as part of Arts House's program.
Yep.
And commissioned by your downstairs neighbours at Experimenta.
Oh, they've moved out now. But
I still saw their name on the wall. And so they've been amazing. They've been with the project all the way through its iteration to a gallery installation. So
right.
When we were sort of doing it, it was so hard to get everyone in the room at the same time. We knew we might not ever get to have it exactly the way we wanted it again, so that 2 years out, we knew that we would make it into a video installation. So it was filmed all the way through development, rehearsals, and all the testing.
Yep.
With sort of feature film cinematographers to become a gallery installation.
So explain it to us. A drone and opera don't go together very often. Is it the drone as we know, and is it opera as we know?
Yeah, it's totally both. It's actual opera singers who have professional sort of serious opera careers with Sue Frickberg, a composer who's a very established composer. And it was... and the way it sort of came together... It was originally a gallery project. So I was living in New York at the time, and I had convinced my gallery to let me do a drone painting. So I was going to put canvases at each end of the gallery, and for the opening night we would have a drones with paintball guns fly around as a performance, and the mess would stay up.
Yep.
And that turned out not to be possible for lots of...
Really, because you would spill it over reasons. The people.
No, you're not allowed to arm drones in America. Like, it was a legal problem.
Okay. Yeah.
And as it turns out, in Australia. So when we tried to do it here, you aren't allowed to use drone... you're not allowed to use paintball guns off a paintball premises without spending a lot of money on...
Right.
Okay. Licensing and stuff,
things. And so as that was going to be part of IZEA in 2013, and I did another project instead, and then the director of IZEA, Jonathan Parsons, became the director of Experimenter and rang one day and said, let's do it at Experimenter.
Right.
Hi, Jono. Big shout out to Jono.
So the drones are filming the opera singers. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, and the space they're in. So the idea behind it was that my interest in drones over the years had been camera movement. So a lot of my video art had been about a choreography of camera movement. So cameras on motorbikes, cameras on people, steady cams, things like that. And so the original idea was the movement of the drones, and it was going to be a quite short, still painting kind of performance with maybe some music when it was going to be at IZEA. And then when it came to Experimenter, it had to be more of a longer ticketed performance. And so originally we thought we would do it with ballet dancers. I've been really interested in dance all my life as well, and I'm a big fan, and I thought we would test that. And it really, the dancers sort of were doing something quite similar to the drones in a sense. It sort of, we all understood there needed to be, you know, Kate Richards, the producer, and Sue and I were kind of talking about what it needed as the conductor of human emotion. It couldn't just be... The drones couldn't be the interesting thing. It couldn't be Top Gear for drones. It had to be something that... And so we thought of opera singers as something that was, as you know, the drones and the laser sets are so baroque and so intense and so sensory that we're sort of thinking, what's the equivalent intensity of that? And something as full-on as opera was the answer. And it's ended up working really well as a complement to the drone. So the drones have sort of become the... instruments that play. There's no other sort of instrumental music behind it.
Oh, okay. So the opera singers singing along to the sound of the drone.
Yeah, so the drones are... The opera singers and the libretto that Sue's written is written to music, to, you know, so there's sheet music of it, like it's actually written out.
Yeah.
But the drones are in the background, and then each night Phil Simarsis, as a sound artist, would make a sort of a sound score for... the performance that was slightly different every night.
Yeah.
And the singers would sing over the top of that.
Right. And how did you film it? Was it filmed just in front? It wasn't filmed by the drones or anything?
Each night there was 9 cameras, and then we filmed 2 years before that. So there's more than I would normally have for a feature film. This is like twice as much material over 2 years. So because we knew we'd never do it again before we did the performances, we had 2 years to say... To ask ourselves, how would this be different? How can this be a different work? How can this be a totally new work to the performances? And how can, you know, the risk was always it would feel like documentation. Mm. And so there's a lot of stuff of us, you know, practicing or trying ideas or doing things that didn't work in the performance, but are part of the world of the drone opera. So the lasers, the singers, the sets, the meat market in Melbourne is an incredible space.
Yep.
And then thinking, how can we make this different? And then Robin Fox, who did the laser set design, so there's no sets, physical sets, it's the space is carved by the laser planes of different colours, and that's sort of made the space.
And how is it presented in the gallery?
In the gallery, it's on... This is something I've been wanting to do for ages, and so it's on 266 panel LED screens that you would normally see at a music concert. So those screens at the front, that I've wanted to do for years and years, but it's really hard to and expensive
to separate the images to be able to project into that sort of level of a grid.
It's because it's something that is not set up for the economics of the art world with 3 month shows and modest budgets. It's something that is really done for a concert for a night or two, or a festival for a weekend, and they, you know, it's $500,000 of screen. And so it's really, it's actually happened through a favour with someone that I worked with in the past on some concerts and then on the drone opera. So the actual performances come from JPJ, Larry Ponting, thank you very much, and Gary Davey at Lighting Lab. And so through those relationships, we were able to borrow the... for a very modest fee to make it happen.
How big are the screens?
They're huge. So the biggest I thought they could be in the gallery. So the idea is that they're 5 metres by 3 metres with scaffolding theatre truss on the outside. So the idea is it sort of references a rock concert and the theatre. So the truss you see in the footage of the opera comes sort of to life as a sculpture on the in the screen that it is made out of. And so during the... during the actual opera, the drones are flying around filming the space, and so you see the space you're in as the audience being mapped.
Yeah.
And you see the view from the drones, the view from the singers, but you also see the view from a number of stationary cameras around the set. So
sounds amazing. Now, tell us about the gallery you're in.
So the gallery is a private gallery by Corbett Lyon and Eugene Lyon, and they've sort of had been very... passionate art collectors for a long time.
Just mention about the house next door. They've got a house next door to the gallery, which I'm sure you've been into the house.
The house next door, I have a work in at the moment that's my two-year-old daughter dressed as an astronaut running around. So I've been in that house quite a lot.
Right,
and that was my first relationship. So... Corbin,
are you aware of that?
Yeah, I know. It's a house museum, so it's their private residence.
Yeah, and you book,
but you can go
on tours, which I've done.
Yeah.
And then they've built this gallery next door. They've paid for this gallery.
Yeah, so the house museum was sort of an experiment to see if you could live in a space that was also a public collection and also a place for artists to come and do exhibitions.
And people, you've got to go at some stage in your life. You've got to go to this their house, book a tour and go. It's worthwhile.
Absolutely, and they're very welcoming and there's a lot of time spent. They'll show you around.
The wife took us on the tour,
So next door, they've bought the property next door and built a public gallery. So this is a gallery they don't live in, that is open 6 days a week from 10 to 5, Tuesday to Sunday, and is the which will have temporary exhibitions and group exhibitions, and also will eventually sort of be gifted the collection.
Right, and that's where the drones are.
And that's where the drones
opera
are.
Is. Well, I just can't wait to see it. You know, like I was absolutely fascinated reading the media release and also where it is as well. And your backstory is fascinating. What are you doing next? Have you got some wild idea in the head that you just got to do?
I'm not sure of what's next, to be honest. This has been such a big part of my life for so long that until this is over, I haven't thought too far ahead. But I've been writing a film, so the probably follow-up feature at the moment will be a film about... not entirely sure yet, but it's sort of somehow set in the contemporary dance world of Melbourne. And
right.
It'll be a dancing sort of road movie is kind of where it's looking at the moment.
Okay. Awesome.
Wow.
Oz Ballet Regional Tour gets bloody.
So, Matthew, how can we find out more about it? You on all the social medias?
I think House Museum is. So I think there's a House Museum.
Oh, you're not personally?
I have a very minimal account that's largely just to so my daughters know that everything they post on Instagram I see. And that is Matt_Sleeth. And then the Lyon House Museum has its own Instagram and its own website as well, which is really the place to go and book tickets for the... Can I just mention one more thing as well? The last night, which will be the last time we probably see the drone opera, will be a gig that Nat Grant and Dave Brown are doing as a performance that responds to the installation while it's playing, so a noise guitar and percussion performance, which I'm a bit excited about.
And it finishes on the 29th.
The last afternoon of the exhibition will be Nat and Dave performing.
Right. Matthew,
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.